I think that my private nudity is my private nudity. But my public nudity? In defense of democracy or fighting against an oppressor? Oh God, I love that body because it's disruptive. Oh my God, she's beautiful, she's on fire, she's running, she's hot, she's getting attention, she's making points. How many times does a lone woman chase away police men? So what do I think about the public naked body of a woman? This is a wonderful, wonderful tool.
Hi, I'm Kim Chakanetsa, and this is The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. Now, for the last couple of weeks, I've been away in Nairobi meeting some fantastic people and recording some exciting new episodes, which I'll be sharing soon. For now, though, I'm back combing the continent for stories that matter.
This is The Comb.
You need The Comb.
The Comb.
Need The Comb.
The Comb.
In this episode, I'm diving headfirst into a subject that was brought to me by none other than our editor at Focus on Africa Radio, Alice Muthengi. That subject is naked protest. It's a tactic that's had many names: defiant disrobing, genital cursing, female genital power, nude protest. But it comes down to one thing: the threat or action of removing clothes and exposing your body to your opponents, using the power of your female form as a weapon. Alex, explain, why did you want us to look at this subject?
It's a subject that has fascinated me for a very long time. And it started as a young child. The female body is respected in the culture that I come from, the Kamba culture, the same for many Kenyan communities. So I remember growing up having a very difficult time with my grandmother, particularly where nakedness was concerned. She used to tell us stories that women, when they were angry in certain communities, they would expose themselves. And if they did that, it was the ultimate action that was equal to a curse. So this is the reason why she kept saying that we had to sit properly and not expose our nakedness, because to her, it was such a powerful thing. You know, if women exposed themselves, it would either accidentally curse somebody or cause somebody to have trouble, you know, unintentionally.
And what is it about the subject that intrigues you the most, Alice?
I think the reason why it intrigues me, naked protests are very common, incidentally, across the continent. It got me thinking, you know, is nakedness such a powerful tool anymore, given this intersection between modernity and cultural traditionals that are perhaps on the decline? It made me curious and wonder, you know, would I perhaps take part in a naked protest? What prompts or makes women want to take part in this protest?
The practice has roots all the way back to medieval times and has been used for different purposes and with different interpretations. In recent decades, women of all ages, education levels and occupations have mobilized the power of their bare bodies.
Recent incessant killings in parts of Southern Kaduna, thousands of women on Thursday took to the streets naked to register their displeasure.
The women's desk of the ANC Women's League will be holding nude protests in honour of the late Rhodes University student Kensani Maseko and other rape survivors.
The women and some youth then returned to where the minister's car was parked and stripped off.
Some of these students are bare-breasted, saying that they do not want police to shoot them. We do apologise to any of our sensitive viewers at this stage. These women saying...
I'm going to be delving into the historical roots of naked protest, as well as looking at how women are still using the tactics in the era of social media connectivity. I'll be speaking to two women who each have a valuable insight into the practice. Stella Nyanzi, who has used nude protest in Uganda, and Naminata Diabate, an author and researcher of naked protest, whose work is inspired by her experiences growing up in Côte d'Ivoire.
Record pressed.
I want to start with Stella, perhaps the best known nude protester of recent years.
My name is Stella Nyanzi. I'm a Ugandan currently living in Germany. I was a research fellow trained in anthropology.
First and foremost, Stella is an academic and activist, but she's made headlines in Uganda and beyond with her nude protests. For anyone who's seen Stella's activities, you might think that she was always destined for this role. But Stella says her conservative Christian upbringing encouraged a very different attitude to her body.
During puberty and adolescence, especially because of conservative Christian notions about women's bodies, but also because of my African culture, there was conflict of messages. And for a child that's curious and questioning, many times the idea that a good Christian girl, a good colonized Ugandan woman from my ethnic group must be covered, contradicted sharply the idea of our ancestors who walked around quite freely on the equator where it's quite hot with their bare bodies. And so I think that while the civilizing mission, particularly of our colonizers, taught young girls who went to missionary boarding schools, such as where I went, we were trained to dress up and cover the breasts, cover the upper arms, never expose the thighs, etc., because it was sinful, it was sexually tempting, it was immoral. A lot of my young questioning self often wondered about my great-great-grandmothers and great-great-grandfathers, for whom the hot climate and the lack of policing of bodies in public did not necessarily equate to putting on clothes that covered the entirety of the female body.
Although Stella was already questioning the conservative values she'd been raised with, it wasn't until much later, when she was an established academic and a mother, that Stella realized the power of her body in its unclothed form. The situation, which she says made it necessary for her to use this power, came through a dispute at work. Stella had a grievance, and after years of appealing, she'd reached the end of her patience.
Speak back at them. I have to challenge this. I have to contest this.
Facing off against an old institution and powerful individuals, Stella felt no one was taking her plight seriously. It occurred to her that there was one sure way to get the attention she needed.
I thought quite carefully about the act. There were suspicions at the time that I just lost my mind and threw off my clothes, but actually what happened was totally different. There was planning and consultation and reading and discussion and even preparation of my young children, for whom it was important that I explained why it was necessary.
But despite all that prep, nudity still wasn't Stella's first choice of action. She thought carefully through the imagery of her protest.
So I bought chains. I also went to buy a tin of red paint.
Hoping she might be able to be shocking and attention-grabbing enough not to need to remove her clothes.
I wanted to symbolically work with padlocks and locks and opening spaces.
But it wasn't enough. For all her efforts, no one came to see the spectacle. With no audience and no press to give meaning to her protest, Stella did what so many other women have also done when pushed to that point of fury and desperation. She threatened the action which she knew would finally be enough to get people to pay attention.
I took some pictures and I posted this on Facebook. And I said to them, in 3 or 4 minutes, I'm going to undress as a symbol of exposing the rot at my Institute of Employment. And I'm summoning the media, because I wasn't saying the media, I wasn't saying my comrades. I was alone, and if I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And so I was counting down, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 50 seconds, 30 seconds, all the way down.
When the countdown finished, Stella did it.
I undressed the first time and began cursing and swearing. The very first performance was quite lonely and unnoticed. Thankfully, because there's Facebook and Twitter, I took pictures of my naked form and I posted these pictures on my Facebook timeline.
And what was going through your mind at the time, Stella? Obviously, this is quite a dramatic thing that you're doing. What were you thinking as you were doing it?
Resist. Defy. Speak back. All the other more respectable, much more subtle, more dignified modes of conflict resolution had not worked. I needed an attention grabber.
And it worked.
Everybody came running. The hierarchy of the university, they all came running to me to say, put on your clothes, you've embarrassed us enough, right? Mm-hmm. Feminist professors, they came running to say to me, put on your clothes. The police, they came running, right? And so, was it powerful? It was. I taught the university, I taught it that a young woman can stand up and fight for her rights.
Stella's activism wasn't over. There was an even more dramatic moment of nude protest to come. Stella has become known as, to put it mildly, an outspoken critic of President Museveni. And in 2017, she was arrested and charged with cyber harassment and offensive communication after calling President Museveni a pair of buttocks.
I wrote a poem in which I was praying that Tshisekedi had squeezed the president at birth so we wouldn't have this monstrous dictator born from this woman. Rather than undertake the interpretive duty of interpreting my metaphors, the president was offended. I was arrested, detained, tried, prosecuted, found guilty, convicted, sentenced to 18 months in prison.
2 years after writing the poem, Stella's frustrations with the justice system came to a head at her sentencing hearing. Rather than being able to attend the hearing in person, Stella was instead taken to an all-male prison where she was connected to the courtroom via a teleconferencing system.
The last moment I would have to interact with this specific magistrate, I was denied, most importantly, an opportunity to look at the eyes, look into the eyes of the magistrate as she sentenced me to 18 months. And so as she sentenced me, I began to speak back at her, raising my middle fingers, cursing the justice system, cursing the courts.
The justice system does not work for us!
Desecrating the courts because of the injustices that were being meted out to political prisoners. My voice, my volume was cut off.
Unable to make herself heard, Stella turned again to the tactic she knew would be impossible to ignore.
The camera was still running, and so I gave the courtroom the delight of my protesting body. I threw off my blouse, threw off my, you know, bra, and jiggled my breast. I was in prison, surrounded by men, male prisoners and male. They didn't know what to do. And one of the most powerful effects, immediate effects of nude protest is men with power don't know what to do with a naked, angry woman. And that is very empowering because they were carrying their guns, they had their walkie-talkies, they had all these gadgets, and they could do nothing to stop me.
The consequences have been tough for Stella. Personally, she's endured the trauma of having her sanity questioned.
It's as if a woman cannot resist powerfully unless she's mentally ill. As if boldness among women equates to mental illness.
And perhaps even more difficult has been the impact of her protests on those around her. And like most naked or nude protesters, Stella makes her actions alone, rather than as a part of a group. But she's found that being seen as a single solo entity isn't something she always has the power to control.
It's not without its challenges, especially in a conservative communal society where, because of Ubuntu or notions of communal spirit and togetherness and relationship, one is never entirely alone. So perhaps if I was living in an individualistic, capitalistic society, I would get off with it without affecting other family members. One example of this is immediately after my nude protest at Makerere University, mm-hmm. the national state-owned newspaper, TV and radio went to my father's grave. My father was deceased. They went to my father's grave and took pictures of the grave to show the man who raised a one-ton wild motherless woman.
Stella, do you consider yourself to be part of a longer tradition of naked protests or nude protests in Africa?
Yes and no. So I think there are very many similarities and echoes between the power of the naked caste, the naked woman, that I get from that tradition. There are also many departures. I'm not a weak woman. I go to nudity as perhaps the most convenient and most effective and cheapest route of protest for me. When I was starting, I didn't realize how powerful cultural values and norms and these legends and rituals are. Because as raised Christian, I wasn't raised in the tradition of the African people from whom I descend. But part of the defense that I received when the public was criticizing and condemning me for being an African and how it is a culture for a woman to undress or be abrasive and loud and use such graphic language, there are cultural leaders who said, no. In our culture, as the Baganda people, the mother of twins has special licenses to speak out on behalf of violated, particularly children, so the weaklings, the lower underdogs, and she's allowed to use whatever expression. I have learned myself that while it may be unacceptable for the vast majority of colonized, Christianized, civilized people, it is also very central to the norms and traditions and values, particularly of my ethnic group, the Baganda, where older women are also using this.
Ways Stella is unusual among naked or nude protesters in Africa. Since the 1990s, thousands of women have taken to the streets, either naked or threatening nakedness, in order to resist during social and political crises and to punish elected officials. The act of stripping can signify a vulnerability, demonstrate the depth of distress, or indicate a powerful ability to curse opponents. Unlike Stella, most of these women remain fairly anonymous within a crowd and unwilling to speak about their dissident disrobing. But the activities of these women still provoke intense debates, and participants can face hostile counterattacks, with illegal threats, verbal and physical abuse, even threats against their lives.
I'm Naminata Diabate, and I'm originally from the Ivory Coast in West Africa.
Naminata Diabate is a scholar of biopolitics and something of an expert in naked or nude protest in Africa. In fact, she's written a book on it, Naked Agency. Naminata says that her original interest in the power of nakedness as a weapon came in part from her childhood experiences growing up in a mixed community in Abidjan.
My mother and my then older brother entered into a verbal altercation. And my brother did something that was not allowed in our household, which was to respond to your parents if they were to complain to you. My brother would not give in. I remember vividly, at some point, we heard my mother say, "I have the ability to jeopardize your future. I will ruin your future." And it's in that moment that we all tuned in, because we understood that she was about to use her nakedness. And it's in that moment that my brother gave in and walked out of the room.
So when you heard your mother say this, you automatically knew that she was going to take off her clothes. How did you make that connection that that is what she was going to do? Had something happened before?
There was this understanding because we were growing up. We heard stories of futures and lives that were ruined with this gesture. Although we had not experienced it, but we knew the meaning and the implications of a mature woman's nakedness. And I was living in a neighborhood that was populated by different ethnicities from the Ivory Coast, but also different nationalities. But it was understood that an older woman's body, especially her nakedness, was a sight that nobody wanted to see.
And from a cultural point of view, your mother says that, you know, it would ruin your brother's life. She had the power to ruin your brother's life. How would her nakedness ruin his life?
The idea that we grew up with was that a mature woman's body was housing maleficent and beneficial forces. And the exposure of the body in specific circumstances meant unleashing those forces. The expectations were that the person will experience loss of job, he will experience incurable diseases, he will experience infertility, and probably literal death. Of course, the idea of social death being ostracized for the community was also widespread.
What was it like witnessing it for you?
It was arresting. We were not expecting my mother's willingness to use it. And the whole altercation became real. So it's the willingness that was much more traumatizing, shall I say.
Years later, while pursuing doctoral studies in the US, Naminata found herself thinking back to this powerful moment, a moment which seemed at odds with the narrative on African womanhood she was seeing and hearing in America.
And I was frustrated by the kinds of images of Black women's bodies that I was being exposed to in those classes. Because typically, the text that we were reading dealt with rape as weapon of war, HIV/AIDS, or female genital surgeries. Those were typically the images that were associated with Black women.
Keen to redress the balance, Naminata started a research project into what she calls Women's Naked Agency.
When I started this project, I thought that it was limited to a specific set of communities. But then I realized that it was a continent-wide gesture. So I set up a Google alert, and daily I was alerted to events happening across the continent.
One of the fascinating things that you write about is the variety of different meanings behind the act of removing clothing. Could you just explain a couple?
When it came to younger women, for example, the students in South Africa, they were not necessarily...
Naminata is talking about the Fees Must Fall protest by students in South Africa in 2016. As violence escalated, three young women stood topless between the protesting students and the armed police, demanding a ceasefire.
They were not necessarily mobilizing the cosmological meanings of their bodies. Mostly, their gestures was motivated by sheer outrage and the lack of options to make their cases heard.
But in other examples, Naminata says women actually are banking on the potency of what they believe to be powerful forces within their bodies.
For example, in 1991, during a protest against the former Malian president, some older women supposedly stripped naked because the army had shot at their sons. And according to commentators, the women's gesture of stripping naked and cursing the then Malian president led to his downfall. If you believe in African belief system, that the female body is a very dangerous entity, that is the door into the world, but it's also the exit door which can cause your death. This should be the most abominable sight that a man could be exposed to.
The arrival of smartphones and social media has transformed the implications of naked or nude protest.
I think it has democratized the kind of people who can mobilize it because of the possibility of their grievances being heard around the world. The internet has enabled the proliferation of the gesture, but it has also prevented more examples. Your nakedness will be out there for everybody to have access to. The backlash, the shame, and also the fear that images of your nakedness will follow you forever, at least for as long as the internet is available.
As someone who fully understands the power of naked protest, would you personally take off your clothes and protest, Naminata?
I will not rule it out. Nakedness in anger is one of the most universal forms of conflict management. Some of the women take off their clothes on the spur of the moment. It is not a gesture that they premeditated. So I could, in the appropriate situation, strip naked. And that will mean that I am entering in my most powerful state. Because it is in that very moment when I strip naked that I'm discarding all of my other identities. University professor in the United States, coming from a Muslim family of the Ivory Coast, a woman of a certain age, I am discarding all of these identities. So I really believe in the power of it. Not that my body is inhabited by certain forces, but just the power of my thinking in anger. That's what I believe in.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Comb. Next week, Life After Loss. A look at grief and grieving with the help of a professional mourner.
We all have to learn how to cry so that when your loved one dies, you don't have to go and hire somebody and pay money for the person to come and cry for you. If you know how to cry and your loved one died, you have to cry yourself. Because it's the custom of Ghana here that when someone dies, you have to cry. And there are some words you have to say in your crying.
This episode was produced by Mary Goodhart and presented by me, Kim Chakanetsa. Rob Wilson did the sound design. Piers Lynch is our editor. And a special thanks to our Focus on Africa editor, Alice Muthengi.